The good, the bad, and the ugly.
With Terence Pillay.
Amit, what exactly is ADHD?
So ADHD has two components. It's inattentiveness. So attention deficit is the AD, and the HD is the hyperactivity. So when we're looking at diagnosing a child with ADHD, we have to look at those two components in order to fit a criteria. And we use what we call the DSM-5 criteria in order to identify whether the child meets the full criteria or not.
Mm. And so, I think so that's the main thing.
So basically, what you're looking for are these symptoms need to be present for at least 6 months, and the child needs to show sort of malfunction or maladaptive behavior in two environments, that being either at home or at school or in a social environment on the weekends with family members. So it can't just be something that's in one environment, for example, at school, but the child, when the child gets home, you know, the parents don't notice any of those features. And that's important, because if it is just one environment, then one needs to look at what in that environment is causing the issue. And that's why it's important, and it's stipulated in the DSM-5 criteria that you need it in at least two or more settings. Yeah.
So let me paint the scenario for you. My case study last week said that the kid was acting out in school, but not at home. And then the school recommended that they see a clinical child psychologist.
Yes.
And the child psychologist then recommended mood stabilizers. What is your opinion of that scenario?
In that situation, I think, as I've mentioned, because you've only got it in one environment, it's unlikely that the child would need to be medicated, because these children, when they're maladaptive, and it's something like typically ADHD, it doesn't matter where they are going to be hyperactive and inattentive. And so for me, if it's happening only at school, then we need to address and find out what's happening at school. That sort of, maybe if it's the school environment, or if there's something in particular in the class, a kid or another child, that's causing the child to become hyperactive, then that may be something that we need to look at.
So, you know, when the show aired last week, we had a record number of comments and stories from parents. So it seems to be quite a hot topic. But what have you seen in your own practice?
To be quite honest with you, Terence, ADHD makes up at least 30% of my practice at the moment. Yeah. And I'm getting more and more referrals, more and more new referrals, which is a good and a bad thing. The reason why, you know, sometimes I feel that teachers are pressured almost for kids to perform. And so as a backdrop, they're like, look, put the child on medication. The flip side is also that we're seeing kids that really need to be on the medication detected a lot earlier and thus put onto treatment earlier, and so their outcomes are better. So it's a double-edged sword, and it just depends on which side you fall on. But yes, more and more kids are being picked up. Number one, because I think teachers are more aware of it. And number two, I also feel that there's a lot of pressure on teachers to try and get kids to pass.
So is that not just an easy route then?
It is sort of a safety net. And that's why we, as well, in the health profession, we advocate that, you know, you go to someone that's going to screen you, that, you know, does the proper assessments and then decides whether the child needs to be on some form of therapy rather, because that can be either medication or non-pharmaceutical medication as well.
So you're a pediatric neurologist.
Yes.
Take me through what happens in the brain of a child that is diagnosed with ADHD.
Okay. So I think let's just step a little bit back before we go on what happens in their brain. Firstly, because there's two entities. Now, typically, the age of onset for ADHD, let's start there, is at around 4 years. Mm. And what happens there is that you pick up the hyperactivity first. So the child that's sort of getting up, they're not focusing, they're here, they're there, they're bouncing off the walls. And those are typically occurs in boys. So hence, boys will tend to present a lot earlier than girls. Girls tend to have the more inattentive type. So they'll be sitting down and they'll lose focus, and, you know, they'll sort of be easily distracted. So they won't be hyperactive, but they won't be focused. And girls therefore present a little bit later. And what happens is that as the years go on, and when school becomes a little bit more demanding and you need to focus a little bit more, that's why at around the age of about 4 to 6, that's when kids start presenting with these symptoms, because that's when they're really there to sort of focus, and the schoolwork becomes a bit more with regards to volume and they need to educate. So what happens in these kids is that they just have this, for the hyperactivity case, they just have this feeling that they need to move. They just have to move. They have to be on the go. Sometimes they'll blurt out answers before the question's even finished. That's what happens with the hyperactive child. The inattentive child tends to be sort of distracted and lack of focus per se, and that's the two entities. So they just sort of get a little bit bored and sort of wander, and then you have to bring them back again, and that's what happens with them. Yeah.
And so I think where I'm getting at is that these drugs that are prescribed to address these problems,
yes,
what does that do to the brain? Does it balance the imbalances?
Okay. So what's typically used is methylphenidate. That's the active drug ingredient. And what that does is it increases the dopamine within the brain. So it prevents the uptake of dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter in the brain. So it's one of the chemicals that allows the brain cells to sort of talk to each other. And by having a lot of that around, you can then understand that the cells are able to interact with each other a lot better and more. And that's why focus is a lot better with regards to that.
And I've read, though, that there could be some serious long-term repercussions.
Yes, yes.
What are those?
So the one that we typically worry about is methylphenidate and excessive dopamine levels can actually suppress appetite. So let's just talk about that, for example. Now, if you can imagine that you have a child who's hyperactive, or now you put them on a drug that also decreases their appetite, what actually happens is that you can, over the long-term period, weight becomes a problem, height becomes a problem. So these children then become stunted and they have underweight or they're malnourished. So those are aspects that we also need to look at. So yes, they may be acing in class, but if you've got all these other problems, then you know you're running into issues there. Furthermore, if you don't have a balanced diet, it's going to affect your concentration. So you need to be very careful when you're starting these kids on these treatments that you need to also look at that as almost a comorbidity that can occur.
And do these kids need to see a medical professional as opposed to just going to a child psychologist or a psychiatrist or someone like that?
Yeah, I think so. In my experience and the children that I've seen, I would strongly recommend it because I've seen the sort of long-term effects where kids have been stunted and have been sort of, you know, malnourished and obviously not picked up because when they're on treatment, they're doing well at school. But I think when you see a pediatric neurologist or pediatrician, if I may say, they would rather look at the child holistically and, you know, do the plots and make sure they're growing well and things like that as well. So I would actually recommend that they do see a pediatrician or a pediatric neurologist.
Because at the end of the day, we're talking about kids that are 4, 5, 6 years old here.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, should we be medicating kids that are that young?
No. So the literature out there actually stipulates that you know, under the age of 6, treatment should only be your second or third line option. And behavioral therapy with the parents and the school, that be the main and first line therapy. In fact, France has pushed that to the event where they're actually trying to prevent sort of medicating their school going kids at all. And it's been working. And I think what happens here, Terence, is that there's a lot of negative enforcement that happens because you can imagine if you have a hyperactive child who's bouncing all over the show, the first thing to do is to be like, no, stop doing that. Otherwise, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. I'm going to take away your toys, take away your games. Then the child feels like, okay, fine. If I need attention, I need to be more hyperactive. Then the only form of sort of feedback they're getting is this negative feedback. And then that filters through into school and it filters through into their social activities. Whereas if you try and reinforce, provide an environment where you actually say, okay, well done, even if it's the little bit that the child has done, but give positive reinforcement, then the child learns, okay, I don't have to be bouncing all over the show. If I do this, I'm going to get positive rewards in return. And that's what behavioral therapy looks at. Changing the mindset of the parents to sort of, instead of being negative upfront, be positive, and also ensure that the environment that the child is in is non-distracting. And that's the other thing that one needs to look at. And I feel the third thing that sort of hampers here is technology, unfortunately, and the access that these kids have to cell phones and tablets. I mean, a study showed that in the US, up to 100% of kids have been exposed to screens by the age of 4 months.
100%.
And what that does is what people don't understand is that if you expose your child earlier to the screen, it's extremely addictive. they did another study where they compared cocaine addicts, and they did special brain scans on them, and they compared them to kids that had more than 3 hours of screen time under the age of 6, and they found that they had similar patterns indicating how addictive a screen can be to an immature brain.
And parents are using these tablets and all of that as babysitters.
Exactly. And what happens then is that these kids then sort of, they just feed off that. And the other thing they don't do is that, how often have you gone to a restaurant and you've seen the whole family, all of them head down in a cell phone or a screen?
All the time.
What that does is that it doesn't show the child how to act in a social environment. So now here you have a child who's only exposed to a screen. They don't know how to sort of interact in a social setting. How then do you expect them not to be hyperactive and be the type of children that are like, give me what I want, otherwise I'm going to just bounce off the walls?
Listen, I'd like to have you back in here for that's a whole other show.
Yeah,
I think we need to definitely discuss that. But what is your first line here? If your child is acting out at school, possibly acting out at home, what should be the first line of or sort of your first port of call?
If the child is acting out, number one, depending on their age, you know, see exactly what is going on. Is it something new, or has the child had it and then it's slowly getting worse and worse? Because that's a different scenario as compared to a child who's in that environment, has been doing well, and then all of a sudden something's happened. Because if it's an acute thing, then we need to see what happened at that stage. If it's something that's been progressively going on, remember other things can also mimic ADHD. For example, epilepsy. If a child is having seizures and they're not controlled, or, you know, that then the child, you can imagine that the brain is not functioning properly, and as a result, clinically manifests as an hyperactive child. So for me, I would say, if it's something like that or something that's rambling on, go to a pediatrician or a pediatric neurologist, let them take the history, do the examination, do the screening tool to determine if the child really has ADHD or is there something else, and investigate accordingly.
So all these parents that have written to me saying that they are battling with the problem of the schools insisting that their kids go on medication to control their behavior and that sort of thing, what advice do you have for them?
What I would say is actually come in, see a pediatric neurologist or a pediatrician. Let them examine the child. Let them take a history first. Come in with a school report as well, so that we know exactly what the school's concerns are. We can then find out from the parents what the home environment is like. Then look at doing the screening test for these children, then examining the child to see if there's nothing else that may be affecting learning. Because even iron deficiency, you know, anemia, those type of things can also affect concentration, and that, which is something that would need to be looked for on a physical examination, and thereafter find out what the true assessment of the child is. Is the child just ADHD? Does he fit he or she fit the full criteria? And do they then subsequently need treatment, or do we need to investigate for some of the other comorbidities that can present with ADHD symptoms?